Did you know that people without houses are, in fact, human beings? Of course you did. But apparently Brendan Fraser didn't, because it took a bizarre remix of Joe Pesci to convince him. It was called With Honors, and it was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hi, my name's Sean Collier. This is the number one movie in America. I'm joined by two small town girls who just want to dance. It's Robin Hitchcock.
Everybody cut, everybody cut.
And Camila Adams.
Yeehaw.
We were so focused on getting to Footloose last week that I did not say our names or do this bit.
Oh.
We also were reacting to your out of character
right.
Cold open.
Exactly. It was a lot. It was a lot to process first thing in a podcast.
But given the episode before last, what would I have said? I'm here with two attendees of a devastating support group. Like, you know, few women in Fight Club.
Oh, okay. No, it would have been Tyler Durden and John Doe, or Jack. That's what it was. Tyler Durden and Jack.
The narrator.
If we thought that people would be outraged that we were maligning Footloose, or at least being not all that impressed by Footloose, no, I don't think anyone's out there who's like, no, it's a classic. Everyone just likes the songs. No real complaints on it landing at 65, a respectable 65 was the final score. That is 40th place overall, sandwiched in between Teachers at 67 and The Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 1 at 64.
I had forgotten about Teachers.
I had forgotten about us doing a Hunger Games episode. If somebody was like, did you do an episode on this? Yes or no, I would have failed.
What? Here's an interesting question. What haven't we hit among...
Major franchise-wise?
A Lord of the Rings? Or have we?
Only because you vetoed The Hobbit.
Oh.
And no Star Trek.
No. Nope.
Star Trek is untouched. We are hitting things wrong. I mean, we've covered Star Wars via Solo.
Yeah.
We got the penultimate chapters of both Twilight and Hunger Games. We got Harry Potter via Fantastic Beasts. You know, we're striking these things the wrong way.
That's Tony for you.
Tony.
Well, here's Tony right now. How did Brendan Fraser re-enter the consciousness? Because, like, I feel like he keeps cropping up lately.
I think it was about him making a conscious decision to rejoin Hollywood, because he had some shit happen to him some years ago, and he was like, fuck this place. And so, yeah, so maybe, like, he's just now starting to feel a little more comfortable with things.
And when you say shit happening to him, you specifically mean sexual assault.
Right.
At least in one incident from the Hollywood Foreign Press Association.
Right, that's the only incident that I've read about or anything like that.
Good riddance to the Golden Globes.
Aggressive, wait, what? I just didn't hear this.
Wait, you missed Brendan Fraser's talking about this happening?
Yes.
Okay. It was a few years ago. It was like, you know, when Me Too was ramping up, he was like, hey, Me Too.
Right.
It was in 2018. And he got groped.
Mm.
And then, you know, pushed back and said, don't do this. And then theoretically got blacklisted for doing so.
Oh, jeez.
And then, like Camila said, he was sort of like, I'm done with this. And I think the other thing that he was done with was being underappreciated by critics. But he didn't say that. But he is.
Which I will chime in. Yes. Underappreciated by critics.
Well, the other tie-in is that the first prominent Brendan Fraser role, first of all, Fraser or Frasier?
I've always said Fraser.
It's spelled Fraser, but I think it's pronounced Fraser.
We will say Fraser.
And Brendan, if you would like to call me and let me know specifically how it's pronounced, that'd be cool.
I also think that my brother's best friend's little brother is named Fraser, spelled that way.
Hmm. Okay.
He's Scottish.
We will let that make the determination. So the first prominent Brendan Fraser role recently just debuted on Thursday, the Steven Soderbergh movie No Sudden Move on HBO Max.
I gotta
and
tell
he's
you.
Really good.
I gotta tell you, that was like after watching 1994 Brendan Fraser and then like the next day popping in No Sudden Move, seeing 2021 Brendan Fraser. It was a little jarring. And it was a Brendan Fraser double chin feature, if you will. And unbeknownst to me, I didn't realize that he was in it. It was a nice surprise, though. But you're right. He was very good in it.
Yeah, he's a different. He's kind of got a John Goodman thing happening right now. He's kind of that not just in his size, just in his kind of attitude and carriage. He's kind of a, you know, middle aged and you know, a little bit over it. And he's acting. He acts very well in this new movie. Yeah. And here, much earlier in his career, you know, I don't know. What do you both think about this movie before I keep going?
This movie, this script is very weak. And,
yes.
And though there is a story to be told in there, but it's like, it's real sloppy. And there were like a couple of moments where it's just like, oh, this is where, oh, okay, so we're just going to miss that completely and walk right past what would have been a very great, wonderful plot point in this film. But yeah, but as always, per usual, like I enjoyed watching Brendan. Oof, I got to say the best part of this movie was seeing him in his pajamas.
You see his tush.
That's right.
And I am not too proud to say that I rewound.
Hey.
Yes.
Listen, we've all paused and rewound a lot of things. Nothing wrong. In fact, my great Letterboxd list for the week is entitled Brendan Fraser Ranked by Fuckability.
Nice.
It is a full
nice.
Accounting of all of the Fraser roles.
Here for
what
did
they say? Physicality and personality both are factored in.
Nice.
And with honors is number two, behind only the original Mummy.
Physicality and personality is ranked in there, and that's number two? I feel like Encino Man would have been number one or two.
One person's taste. Encino Man is, where is Encino Man? Yeah, got to be middle of the pack here.
I hope this person was at least a teenager in 1994.
Son-in-law is down to 51.
Ugh, son-in-law.
Oh, Encino Man is right in the middle there, 27th. Yeah, The Mummy with honors, Miss Winterbourne, something called Younger and Younger, Now and Then, $20, Presumed Guilty, Still Breathing. Dudley Do-Right is ninth. Now that's a fetish.
Come on
you
now.
Just like
yeah, right? You just have a thing for Mounties. Just go ahead and say it.
Robin, you said you grew up with Honors.
It is one of those movies that was on cable all the time, and it was a channel stopper for me. And watching it today, I don't know why.
I remember seeing this back in 94, 95 and not being impressed with it and not ever going back to it. And then, but I had forgotten about it. Like I had forgotten anything about it. Like I couldn't remember anything, the plot really or anything or other than, you know, who the characters were, because I had that poster on my wall for the longest time, but only because Brendan Fraser was on the poster and everybody else was covered up with other like cutouts from teen magazines or whatnot.
That's amazing. No, my best guess for why I like this is Brendan Fraser's face. And at the time, I thought that Moira Kelly's character was super cool and wanted to be like her. And just the general thing of, you know, when you're a kid wanting to be older and cooler and at college. And Joe Pesci is just always a really compelling screen presence. So, and I wasn't smart enough to see how problematic everything is and how, as Camila pointed out, poorly plotted and written this movie is.
Yeah, I hated this movie. You know, coming in cold, I was like, okay, it's a 90s drama. You know, that can go a lot of different ways. It's interesting. I like a lot of people in this cast. And then the combination of just how like, oh my God, are we going to learn life lessons because the wise vagabond led a life before he was living? Oh, really? Combined with like Joe Pesci doing this bizarre, you know, I like him a lot.
Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy.
Yeah. And a dumb premise. Oh, you lost your... Oh, I went to make a copy of the only thing and dropped it in this one hole, and now he's just going to happen to, you know, get this little scheme to give me pages back so we can stretch out over the... Dumb.
Yeah, I can't believe how much my only copy was lost is a plot point
right?
in 90s movies. Like, at that point, we had floppy disks. By the end of the 90s, we had all sorts of ways to hold store data. Like, right. Come on, people.
I did love the crashing computer putting up increasingly dire, you're screwed.
Lost forever.
It says lost forever on the screen. Like, how does...
It's like, your computer seems a little petty.
If you didn't see this movie and you had to be watching cable in a specific window, apparently, to have seen this movie, let's tell you what it's about via a 60-second recap this week from Camila Adams.
Unprepared.
Woo!
Excellent. Ready and... Go.
Everyone's mid-90s boyfriend, Brendan Fraser, is Monty, who is a Harvard student preparing his thesis for graduation. His computer malfunctions and he loses the whole thing. But he has 10 chapters printed, so he hurries to make copies of it before something happens to it. When something happens to it, he drops it down a cellar that leads to the school library and finds a homeless guy named Simon. Simon is burning it for warmth. Simon wants stuff in exchange for the pages, but Monty calls the police instead. Simon is taken off campus, but Monty can't find his paper. Still trying to get his paper back, Monty lets Simon stay in an old van in the backyard. Monty tries to help Simon and get Social Security, but he refuses. Simon and Monty are becoming friendly as Simon teaches Monty about life and being human. Simon makes a speech in one of Monty's classes and gets a slow clap. Turns out Simon has asbestos poisoning, so Monty lets him move into the house with his own room and a key. Simon is dying, so they go on a road trip to see his estranged son. Even though Monty's thesis is due that day, Simon sees his son. His son is like, fuck you, and they go home. Simon dies, and Monty graduates, but without honors.
Well done. 57 seconds, right on it.
I'm glad you mentioned the unironic slow clap.
That was a very early. This is in the archaeological history of the slow clap. This has to be formative. I mean, I know there were slow claps in the late 80s, but it wasn't really a thing yet. We weren't joking about it.
Right.
I believe that slow claps are like that had to have happened in ancient civilizations.
The first man who made fire.
I wish there had been a slow clap in Apocalypto. Yeah.
I would have given it 5 more points for that.
I didn't even stop to reflect until you said it. He's burning the thesis for warmth. He lives in the library. There is a lot of paper. I'm not even just talking about the books. You can get... We see him 10 minutes later steal a bunch of newspapers.
Right.
You're telling me that these 75 pages of loose leaf made a meaningful difference to his warmth that night? Oh, good. I found some paper. What?
I'm so confused as to why he's inside.
He's in the boiler room.
Right.
If you've ever been in a boiler room, they're hot as hell.
Right. Exactly. Like, why does he need to stoke the fire? Like, the fucking building is taking care of that. There are so many things that are questionable. And the fact that, and I don't know if I missed it, but I'm pretty sure I didn't. The fact that they make it, it's like an afterthought. It's like, oh, you're going to graduate, but without honors. And this is the first time we ever hear anything about how important it is for him to graduate with honors or how much. Yeah. And then just the generic fact that, you know, I want to be in government. Just a blanket. You just want to work in government. It's like asking a 9-year-old what they want to do. What do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be in government.
Also, I don't want to deduct too many points from this movie for, you know, being almost 30 years old
right.
and having dated politics. But it's really hard in 2021 to start a movie off with a guy being like, maybe democracy was a mistake. And like, because that is what white Republicans now think. And like, they're not white Republicans. Anyway, it's really hard to like hear that very early on. And I know that they're setting up what he's going to learn his wrongs. But
right.
like, I don't want to root for him,
right.
even if he looks like Brendan Fraser. And then at the end, once he has learned his wrongs, he says, interactive cable represents a new opportunity for pure democracy. And as we all know, interactive cable, the series of tubes we like to call the internet, has created further challenges to the freedom of people everywhere.
Good thought. Well, didn't work out. I see why you thought it would, but you know, things were good about as far as the Encarta encyclopedia on your Windows 95. That was helpful. After that, took a turn.
So anyway, that was hard. That was tough to watch.
Yeah. Oh, 94.
I mean, you can let it have those points for being dated and then still take them away for, oh, do these Harvard undergrads have problems? Do these poor little rich New Englanders have to worry about things now? Oh, isn't that, is no one taking care of his chicken? Oh, no, isn't that a shame?
Oh, I hate the fact that he even has the roommates. They're so unnecessary. Like, there's none of them bring anything to it other than, like, the little conflict about, no, Joe can't live in the house, or what, Simon can't live in the house.
Right. Josh Hamilton's character exists to make Brendan Fraser's character look better.
Right.
I think that Patrick Dempsey is just meant to be comic relief, but it seems like maybe some of his scenes were edited out. Like, I think he's supposed to be, like, the Robert Downey Jr. in Back to School character.
Oh, bless his heart.
But he doesn't really get opportunities to be interesting.
No.
And then Moira Kelly, as much as 10-year-old Robin wanted to be her, is just completely underwritten and like, cool girl, let me borrow a condom. Like, just a lot of bullshit.
Yeah, and it was the whole romance thing was unnecessary, but we are getting too far into it.
Yeah, let's talk about the facts, and then I've got more to say.
Patrick Dempsey's there to get a chicken in the movie. The chicken gets eaten, and Patrick Dempsey's like, oh, you. Yeah, when this movie tried to liven things up by eating a pet!
Right? I thought for sure, now we'll get some conflict. Now we'll get some strife. And he's like, oh. And it was a very 80s sitcom moment.
With Honors was released April 29th, 1994, but it was not the number one movie in America that weekend. The first week, it finished in second, $4.3 million, just about $250,000 behind No Escape, which is an action sci-fi with Ray Liotta and Lance Hendrickson. That week, No Escape was number one. They moved around the next week. The next weekend, the top five all finished between $3.1 million and $3.7 million. It was a big logjam at the top. With Honors just edged out Four Weddings and a Funeral, which had already won a weekend a few weeks before. With Honors beat it by less than $100,000. Then Three Ninjas Kick Back and Clean Slate. No Escape fell to fifth, but again, barely. Everything was just crowded in there. With Honors ended up on top, concluding a spring slump that year. Major League 2 won a week, then the former champ D2, the Mighty Ducks, came back and won another weekend. Four Weddings, Bad Girls, No Escape, and With Honors, they all won weekends, none of them cracking $7 million. And then they all got obliterated, because the next few number one movies are The Crow, Maverick, The Flintstones, Speed, Wolf, and The Lion King, about 6 weeks later. With Honors did manage five weekends in the top 10. That was only good for $20 million, the 69th top grossing film of the year. The movie did have a hit soundtrack, though, and a big single. Madonna's I'll Remember is actually titled I'll Remember, parentheses, Theme from With Honors. That is a song from this movie. For that reason, and only that reason, With Honors is a Golden Globe nominee. It was up for Best Original Song. But of course, the question there was simply which song from The Lion King would win.
Do you know which non-Lion King songs were nominated for an Oscar? Because this song should have been nominated for an Oscar.
Yes, we will cover that in a matter of seconds. The Golden Globe was won by Can You Feel the Love Tonight over Circle of Life. Circle of Life should have won. That was a mistake. Did not get an Oscar nomination. Three of the spots were taken up by The Lion King. Can You Feel the Love Tonight, Circle of Life, and Hakuna Matata sneaking into the Oscar field, along with a song called Look What Love Has Done from Junior.
What?
That is by Patti Smith. No, not that Patti Smith. The other Patti Smith, the one who sang Warrior. And a Randy Newman song from The Paper.
What?
Yep.
Randy Newman?
Again.
My nemesis.
How many does he have? How many Oscar nominated? He's got to be pushing the most nominated in the... Him or Diane Warren, obviously. Robin, 22. Report back next week.
22. And that, sorry, that includes score nominations. So I'll follow up.
How about an MTV Movie Award? Could it get an MTV Movie Award? It's MTV. They love Madonna. Still no. Ugh. It was nominated along with Can You Feel the Love Tonight. No rules at the MTV Movie Awards because the Urge Overkill cover of Girl, You'll Be a Woman Soon from Pulp Fiction was nominated. So it's not Best Original Song, but hey, sure. Also, Warren G's Regulate from Above the Rim. This, however, is the one that Lion King did not win. The winner of the MTV Movie Award was a Stone Temple Pilots song from The Crow.
Nice.
Called
Big Empty, worst of the five songs.
Hey.
Big Empty's a good song.
Wait, what did they lost against Lion King?
No, Big Empty won over Can You Feel the Love Tonight, the Madonna song, I'll remember, Urge Overkill's version of Girl, You'll Be a Woman Soon from Pulp Fiction, and Warren G's Regulate.
Mm. All right, I'll accept that.
Yeah. Listen, I saw Stone Temple Pilots in 1999, too. It's fine. They're good. But I'll Remember is not a number one song in America. It peaked at number two, held out of the number one spot by All for One's I Swear.
Oh, my.
Why so much talk about the song I'll Remember? Because what else is there with this particular movie? There is, however, a further Madonna connection. The director of this film is Alec... I should have practiced this. Keshishian. It's like Kesha, and then it takes a turn. Alec Keshishian. He was best known for directing Truth or Dare, the Madonna concert film. Mm. Because concert films count. That was briefly the top-grossing documentary of all time. And he didn't really stick around in Hollywood. He did more commercials. He did a lot of music videos. Did not have a long feature directing career. He did co-write that movie Madonna directed a while ago, W.E. He is the co-writer of that. And by the way, just a fun fact, remember that striking woman that dances with Joe Pesci at the pajama party?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, he was married to her. So
shut the front door.
Good for him.
Yeah, not for long, but hey, still. Wow. Is Claudia Harrow. Pesci was married to her at the time of filming, barely. They were together from 88 to 92, so this may be the last thing they did as a couple. Joe Pesci has a great personal life section on Wikipedia, because it's like, he was married three times, and then it lists two of them. They're like, we don't know the other one. It was in there somewhere.
Like, we promise it's the truth. Yes, he was married three times, but...
The other good thing on the With Honors Wikipedia page is also about the soundtrack. More of a soundtrack than a movie. I guess that's the other footloose to With Honors connection. This anecdote, the band Mudhoney is featured. Just reading this, so credit Wikipedia. Grunge band Mudhoney were asked to contribute a track to the soundtrack. They said, they sent us a clip from the movie of some jock running through the snow with EMF's hit Unbelievable scoring the action. They said that they were looking for an upbeat song like that for this part of the film. We told them that we had a bitchin' little instrumental that might work. They insisted on a song with words. So I put some words on the instrumental and we sent both versions, figuring they'd have to choose the instrumental. They didn't. Even though they had just named the song Run, Shithead, Run.
Nice.
In response to what was happening on the screen. So the track Run, Shithead, Run is on the album. Mudhoney said they were not asked to contribute any more songs to movies after that.
That's great. I just realized there's a Duran Duran song on there, too.
Not later. I'm sure Duran Duran is still going in some form. But late.
Yes, late. In every form, Sean. Yes. Yeah. As a matter of fact, August 10th is Duran Duran Day coming up. Mark your calendars.
What makes it a Duran Duran Day?
I don't know. Somebody, some super fan somewhere said it.
I have a faxy follow-up, which is Randy Newman has been nominated 13 times compared to Diane Warren's 12 for Best Original Song. But there are several people with more than 13 nominations. And the all-time most nominated person for Best Original Song is someone named Sammy Kahn, who won 4 and is probably best known for Let It Snow, Let It Snow, Let It Snow.
Yeah, Richard Donner died while I was watching this movie, and that feels appropriate. There are little areas where I'm like, okay, I want to give it credit. I want to give it credit for not having a big emotional reunion with the son. With the son just going like,
great.
Yeah.
Honestly, I'm going to be above water on this movie, and it is mostly on the basis of Joe Pesci occasional, like, his performance is uneven. What did you call it? A remix of Joe Pesci?
Yeah, yeah.
But there are moments when it's like, God, he's a good actor.
Yeah.
And Brendan Fraser has a beautiful face and body and tries his best.
I think he's actually pretty. I don't know if it's just he does very well smoldering. Like, he does smoldering or bedroom eyes really well. But I mean, there's something very intense about his facial features a lot of times in these movies. And I think he pulls off comedy well, really well. And there have been some dramas that I've seen that he's done very well, like School Ties or most recently.
Monsters. He's great in that.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't. This was just, the rating on this movie is still a struggle for me. I still haven't landed on exactly where I'm going to be on there. One scene that I thought had something that we were going to get somewhere, and it had like the chops to actually push forward and to like be something and to make this movie all that it wanted to be, is the scene where he's writing his obituary and Monty finds out that he too has abandoned his family. Like, he abandoned his family just like his dad did. And then we just kind of like have this weird edit where it's like we break for a commercial. And it's just, it doesn't go anywhere. And that was so disappointing.
I will say, like, you know, I hate daddy issues. I think that this movie handles daddy issues pretty interestingly. Like, I do like the idea of Brendan Fraser sort of learning to forgive his father. They don't make it pat that he completely does forgive his father, because he sees someone who left his family and experiences remorse. Mm-hmm. And like you said, they don't give Joe Pesci the meaningful reunion. They have his son walk away from him and tell his granddaughter that he is nobody.
Right.
Like, that is devastating. And I cried at the end of this movie.
Did you?
Watching it today and disliking it, I still cried when Joe Pesci died.
Aww.
And they read his obituary over his grave.
Aww. I wanted to. I wanted to cry. I really wanted to give it that. But nothing happened.
Yeah.
It's just tough to die of dramatically timed movie illness. Like, I know we justified it, but Joe Pesci died of love story syndrome. It would be dramatically resonant if I died right now.
Right.
You know, they know he has asbestosis, but like, he barely coughs or wheezes. Like,
right.
Only when the plot needs it.
Right.
And then he's dead.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really fucking special how he waits until Monty and old girl finally hook up to like start his dying process. Like that, like, way to fuck up a post-coital situation.
Hey, you know what would have helped? If we watched them have sex. No, that, hey, could have really got a few minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
But quality there.
Nope.
Can't do that. Sorry, I was about to make a point. Please cut this out. It tied back into the thing with the... Nope, I've lost it. Never mind.
I have some additional facts.
Oh, wait, no, I have it.
Okay.
Give it a... With dying while the people read poetry to him in a montage where it switches from one to the other, but when it switches, they're on the same line.
Right.
Like they're just handing it off. Reading the same poem. That's not how montages work. One of two unacceptable tropes. The other unacceptable trope is, and this movie is far from the only offender. This is just where it jumped out to me. Who takes a full plate out of somebody's hands and says thanks? This happens in movies all the time.
Oh, yeah.
A character walks in, someone's getting their dinner on the plate, and goes, oh, thanks, and takes it and walks away. That's how you get stabbed.
Exactly. Exactly. I have been known to, like, punch, stab, scratch, cuss out people for putting a fork on my plate, let alone trying to take a whole full-ass plate out of my hand. Like, that, no, that's not okay. Like, where were you raised?
At a buffet.
Yeah. Robin, I understand that you can flesh out the Faxi segment with more.
Well, these aren't necessarily facts pertaining to the movie. So a friend of mine, Jay Evans, went to Harvard, which he mentions with some regularity.
Often.
And so I texted him, hey, do you need to complete a thesis as an undergrad at Harvard? And he said, it depends on the discipline. I was a poli sci major and I didn't, or government major, and I didn't have to. And that seems like probably what Brendan Fraser is. Now, it's possible that it's more like graduating with honors, which is actually the situation that Pitt had when I was an undergrad. You had to complete an undergrad thesis to get honors. But that's one piece of information. When I mentioned that I was asking because we were watching this movie, he told me that they have a yearly event at Harvard where they watch this movie and, like, riff tracks it.
Oh, my. Okay, so they riff tracks it.
The additional thing is, you're not allowed to film on Harvard's campus. The last movie that filmed on Harvard's campus was Love Story.
Interesting. But oh, wow. That's why? Why would they choose this movie to have this an annual event with? Like, there's because so many other films that are set in Harvard.
It's entirely possible that they do it with more with other movies.
Gotcha.
I think that this is just one where they're like, it's an easy target for making fun of.
Yeah.
And, like, I think specifically they are making fun of how it doesn't actually look like Harvard, because that's what Harvard people love to do, is talk about how they are at Harvard.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's filmed mostly in Illinois, just with some establishing shots. The director, by the way, did go to Harvard, which makes perfect sense, because that's the only way you could feel like these characters are relatable, right? Like, you have to be like, of course it's relatable. I lived it, to not,
right.
I don't know. I can't watch this movie without going like, I flash back to when we watched 10, and it's like, fuck this rich guy with all the power and money in the world. It's like, again, I don't know that the problems of these, particularly pinging it just to how successfully he will graduate Harvard. Like,
right.
Come on. What a premise.
I do feel like it would have been worse if they did the typical thing with movies where it's like, he's a scholarship student and, you know, he's from the wrong side of the tracks.
That was School Ties.
Right, exactly. Which is a movie that I always confuse with this one. They're very different.
Yeah. I think the most dramatic thing for me in this film was to find out that that Simon was 50, which is like, that's 5 years older than me. Like, how is he? Why? How? What? What?
Yeah, we're all closer to Simon than we are to Brendan.
Right. No.
the Merchant Marine, that'll take it out of you.
Yeah, for real.
That seems like one of those jobs where they get you in the door on, you'll go to Bali, and then it's like, yeah, but.
You gotta breathe in a lot of asbestos.
Right.
Right.
Jay is also, like, he's a personal injury lawyer who focuses on asbestos.
Oh, shit.
So this was
maybe
a movie made
just,
to
maybe
annoy
we
him.
We just had him on.
Yeah.
Let's get back to Joe Pesci. What is he doing in this movie?
I don't know exactly, like, why, what the direction was, whose idea these ticks were.
So this is my best theory. All right. He won an Oscar for playing a dramatic role. He goes on
back
to have a huge hit, as far as I know, Sean, you can correct me, with My Cousin Vinny.
Yeah.
A comedic role. And then he's offered this comedy drama and he's like, aha, it's perfect. But I think he can be very funny, and I think he's a really good dramatic actor. He clearly is not the best at switching gears quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I took a few points away for that Joy Ache bit.
Women are perfect. That's a good moment of Brendan Fraser, though, when that librarian is like, sir, you can't be here. And Brendan Fraser is like, what? He's with me. That's a good moment of Brendan Fraser being mad at her. And then you see across his face, oh, she's acting exactly like I acted 4 hours ago.
Right.
I think you're right. I think he was riding high and could pretty much do whatever he wanted. And so, you know, took some stuff and some of it worked and some of it didn't. And then a few years later, he stopped caring. Don't forget that he pretty much quit in 98. He has been in three movies since 1998.
Joe Pesci?
Yeah, and one of them was a cameo. The Irishman was his biggest role in 20 years.
And he nailed it.
Yeah, he was great.
He's the best in that movie, and I think that all of the acting in that movie is good. Should have been a TV show, but still.
Yes. It's more and more I'm like, I mean, it was shorter than Justice League. You know, it's, what was it, 320? I mean, you know, that's only half an hour longer than most Lord of the Rings. It wasn't that long. Fits on one Blu-ray. Come on. Well, oh, and by the way, look up Joe Pesci's album, which came out a few years after this.
Didn't I clip that into one of our episodes?
I think you might have.
Why on earth was it relevant? Do we know?
We might have just been talking about him.
Got seven cars in my garage, a limousine with a TV and bar. I'm a star. Don't do blow and I don't sell crack. Stay alert, I got someone to whack. I'm a wise guy.
I mean, we played his entire Oscar acceptance speech twice.
And the Oscar goes to Joe Pesci in Goodfellas.
Well, it's my privilege. Thank you.
By the way, anecdote about that. Who is presenting that Oscar? Brenda Fricker. I was showing the clip to Mary Beth yesterday, and she's like, oh, it's the pigeon lady from Home Alone 2. And I was like, no, you have to be wrong. There's no way that a person... And I don't know, I have not seen My Left Foot, and I don't know Brenda Fricker. But I was like, there's no way that someone went from winning an Oscar for My Left Foot to being the pigeon lady in Home Alone 2 in the space of 2 or 3 years. I'm wrong. That's the pigeon lady from Home Alone 2.
Oh, wow.
That was a big news story this year. It was like, the pigeon lady from Home Alone 2 is spending Christmas alone. And I was like, excuse you, Academy Award winner Brenda Fricker. Mm. And also, I think that for people my age who haven't seen My Left Foot, I feel like their touch point for her should be So I Married an Axe Murderer, in which she plays Mike Myers' mom.
Well, let's rate it. This will be interesting. I hate this movie. 15.
Wow.
Let's climb the ladder if Harsh I'm right.
Right.
Camila?
I mean...
Do you want me to go first if it will help you feel better?
No. I'm the 63. I'm going to 63. Give you... Those 40 points are for Brendan Fraser. You don't understand the depth of my love for Brendan Fraser. And shout out to Dan Blue from Toledo, Ohio. Lightweight stalked my coworker because he kind of looked like Brendan Fraser.
And I'm gonna go Robin? 58.
Well, sorry to anchor this one pretty significantly.
I mean, I truly think if this was my first time seeing this movie, I would be way lower. A lot of it is childhood goodwill, and then the rest of it is Brendan Fraser's beauty and Joe Pesci having some really good scenes in there.
Ends at a 45 and a third.
Yeah, I
pulled it underwater, but not that much.
That's what it rightfully deserves. Like, had it been anybody else but Brendan Fraser in this leading role, I probably would have been like 30.
To the bingo card, anything?
I don't think so.
We've already crossed off cigarette smoking because of Fight Club.
Mm-hmm. Wait, do we have New England State on this one?
Yes.
All right, that's one.
Okay, finally. All right, so there. Because I think I crossed it out last time, but it turns out it was not true.
So, exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Just add New England State to your. Certainly not filmed there, but this is one of those where I don't know why people are always impressed by this. The Wikipedia always says the leaves were the wrong colors, so they put individual leaves on the. Yeah, we know that's a thing they do.
Right.
They have
I'm
to make
impressed
leaves.
By it. We were just talking about that with Hero, and what are the leaves made out of? And you were like, hey, they painted the leaves in some horror sequel. You're occasionally impressed by it, Sean. You're just grumpy
then
about
that's
this
why.
Movie.
Then that's why I'm sick of it. Because, yes, it in Halloween and in Hero, I was impressed. And now I'm like, okay, fine, leaves. You paint them. Whatever.
We get it.
Well, that means it's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. What is everybody watching? Let's start with Robin this week.
I went back to the movies.
Yay! How was it?
So I saw F9. I had a big anxiety spike.
Really?
Because I went to the restroom knowing that it was a 2.5 hour movie during the trailers. And when I came back into the theater, I saw a decently full theater full of people with no masks on their face. And just my heart started pounding and I was like hyperventilating and like, that's just the way I am. My husband was there and, you know, he was like, it's okay. We're fine. You know, vaccines work, et cetera. And he was like, if you need to leave, we can leave. And I took some of my as needed anxiety medicine. And then I drifted off during a short part of the movie. But fortunately, none of the Charlize parts. I, for the most part, really enjoyed it. Great movie to come back to the theater with like the vroom vrooms. And if you want to hear more about my thoughts, there will be an episode of my other podcast, Theronathon, discussing this movie soon.
I've seen it twice, only because the winter drive-in nearby was closing, and I wanted to get out on one of their final nights. And F9, it was F9, Peter Rabbit 2, or The Conjuring 3. And among those, I liked F9 more than The Conjuring 3. It's pretty good. I'm listening to The Ringer's film podcast lately, The Big Picture, and they did a massive ranking all of the Furious films with the two hosts and with Shea Serrano, who's like a super fan. And all of the recent stuff was at the bottom of that list. Like in some combination, the bottom ones were 8, 9 and Hobbs and Shaw. Hobbs and Shaw was easily the bottom, which I didn't hate Hobbs and Shaw. But,
neither did I.
I don't think they've fallen off. They're still doing what they're doing.
They're just goofier and goofier, but they're very aware of their own goofiness. And that doesn't work for everyone. It works for me.
I think going to space did not work.
I liked it.
And we know that I love space.
Camila's face. Once again,
I'm sorry, they're in space.
Just briefly.
I stopped paying attention to anything about Fast and Furious. Like, I have nothing against it, but I just, like, it's one of those things, like, you know, it is what it is.
It's what it is.
I recently watched Hobbs and Shaw. I enjoyed it. But, yeah, I just stopped paying attention to Fast and Furious. And they're in space.
It's right in between. It's right in between wacky and, like, they justify it enough to make me go, why are you trying to really just go all out? Somebody stole Elon Musk's experimental vroomy vroomy. Like, but then at the same time, they're like in a fucking car. They're in a car with a wheel and the wheel and the pedals do things. Like, either go all the way there and we're astronauts now,
right?
Or don't. Like, anyway.
I do want to say, speaking of how ridiculous these are, you know how they do the, like, this is what IMAX is when you see an IMAX movie?
Mm. Yeah.
And normally, that's, like, the last thing that they show before the film. And so I was, like, ready for the film to begin. And dinosaurs appeared on the screen. Because as it turns out, they were showing one more trailer for whatever the next Jurassic Park movie is. Mm. And I just fully accepted that a Fast and the Furious movie began with dinosaurs. I was like excited to see where this goes. And Colin said that he had the same thoughts.
The Theronathon will cover this more thoroughly. I think their big problem at this point is that no one will die.
Yeah.
Like, they address this in the movie a little bit, where Tyrese briefly becomes convinced that they're all immortal because they keep surviving shit. But they will never kill any of these characters. And even when they have a character that died a couple movies ago, they can always bring them back to the point where, minor spoilers, very slightly, you don't actually see him, but a car drives up with the implication that that car is being driven by Brian, Paul Walker, who has been dead for 7 years.
I thought he did.
I know.
I thought he did.
Yeah.
I thought his character died.
No.
Okay. No, went away.
All right. I can't get into this.
Don't worry about it. It's not important.
I can't do this right now.
They couldn't kill a guy when they needed to.
All right, let's talk about the Soderbergh movie, which I did not watch because I need more space. I'm not forgiven Soderbergh for the Oscars, and I don't know if I ever will.
Right.
And it sounds like this is a good movie, and I didn't want to hate it on principle.
I mean, I great performances. I feel like the script was kind of just like, it was a little... Yeah, I don't Like, I can't, like, it's totally worth watching to watch Kieran Culkin and Benicio Del Toro and John Cheadle and Brendan Fraser and even Ray Liotta and, you know, a couple of the other people that I don't know names, like, who played David Harbour's wife. It's just like, but it's, the performances were great, but I was not impressed with the story or the script. Like, it just started to get, like, it started to trip over itself towards the middle. And it's like, all right.
Yeah, that was my next question. Are there human women involved?
Two, three.
At least.
Four.
Two, maybe three.
I think there's four. Two that have major points, like plot points in it, that I can think of.
They're all wives, mistresses, or both. But or they're there.
Wives, mistresses, and or secretary.
Right, right. Yeah, I liked it. I'm on the record that I don't like heist movies, and this one is kind of why. By the time everyone got done double-crossing everyone, I didn't care anymore. Like, like they're setting up the mystery for an hour, and I'm there, and then when the explanation comes, I'm like, I'm not even really... Just show me who gets killed and who doesn't, so I can go to bed.
And plus, we like get to the point, like, you know, where they... You purposefully don't hear about a certain actor's playing in a film because that's supposed to be like surprise, this character is supposed to mean something, it's supposed to be a big deal, and you know they have one of those, and I feel like the person chosen for said role was not, it's like, no, that's not who you that's not how you do this for, that's not
compelling.
If you're wondering who it is, just ask yourself, whose dick can Steven Soderbergh not get off of? And that's the answer to the question.
Swinging from his nutsack.
Is it Channing Tatum?
I wish.
No. That would have been a step up.
Yeah.
And I like actor's name. It's just sometimes I'm like, well, this wasn't for him.
And I don't like actor's name.
I cannot wait. Now I want to watch it just to find out.
I feel like, Robin, plug your ears for a minute if you want. I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to. Oh, she took her headphones off.
Okay.
Every time there's a surprise guy in a movie, it's him.
Right.
This is like the fourth time it's been like, hey, guess what? Right. It's like, what? Why does it keep happening?
I don't know.
All right, you're good.
I do have so anyway. Another recommendation.
Yes.
Based on I saw a tweet that was like, my dad told me to drop everything and watch the movie Runaway on Amazon Prime. And so I did. That's not my dad. That's some Twitter dad. And it's a movie from 1984 where Tom Selleck is a cop who goes after robots that are malfunctioning.
Sweet.
Oh, hell yeah.
And the bad guy who's not a robot, Gene Simmons. Anyway, and the chick who was in Staying Alive, who's also in Dirty Dancing, who we liked. I can't remember her name right now.
Sorry.
She is his partner. Anyway, solid 80s thriller on Prime. Check it out.
Nice.
Runaway.
I felt that way about Mayhem. This was on Joe Bob last year, and we turned it off because it was too real. It's about a virus spreading and turning people into rage. They're not zombies. They're just pure rage and lust. And so it like infects an office and everyone. It's one of those, we're all trapped in the office, and who's going to survive and what's going to, because we all have this virus. With Steven Yeun and Samara Weaving. And
I saw that.
It's so good.
Yeah.
So good.
I really like that.
Did you have a recommendation other than on No Sudden Move?
Well, since we're in 94, I did watch Fear Street 1994, since we're celebrating 1994 with honors. It's not terrible. It's fun, hokey, young adult, like what you'd expect. Like, it's based off of the R.L. Stein Fear Street books that I used to love when I was a kid, when I was like a preteen and all that stuff. So, I mean, don't expect like epic proportions of acting and storytelling here. Like, go for what it is. Like, it's a fun slasher to, you know, just like turn off your brain for a second. Apparently there's two more that's coming around it. Like, they're going to 1978 and then to 1666, so I'm on the ride
on consecutive weeks. The second movie is out Friday, the third movie's out next Friday,
so I'm here.
Ooh,
for
like
it
that.
Yeah, on Netflix, so yeah.
I'm going to get to it soon. I certainly read enough of those growing up that I'm going to have to find out.
Right.
Well, let's draw a movie or not. Hey, let's not draw a movie. Robin, tell them why.
Because Addie Twigg has won the auction item from Arcade Comedy Theater's annual silent auction to be a guest on this show. Thank you, Addie, so much for your generous donation to the theater, which is a nonprofit comedy theater located in Pittsburgh, where we record. And part of the deal with that auction item is that she got to select which number one movie in America will be the subject of our episode. And she chose, Sean,
E.T. the Extraterrestrial, which she has not seen. Holy crap.
And I find this particularly delightful because she also was one of our winners last year and chose the movie Alien. So there is a thematic bridge, which my understanding is she did not think about ahead of time.
Did not notice. No, she listed three or four mostly pretty prominent movies. But E.T. was her first choice because she hadn't seen it and was, you know, wanted to dive in. And I said, oh, you're doing an extraterrestrial theme with your appearances. And she said, oh, I guess I am. So they're just good in movies. Aliens are just good in movies. So E.T. next time. For this, I had had my eye on this Steven Spielberg Blu-ray box set. You can't see it because I'm in shadow this week. I have lighting issues. I look like I am telling you what happened on 60 Minutes, and I don't want my identity to be.
I did kind of see it.
10 times I've been in the exchange and been looking at this and thought, I should get that. Because there are 4 no-nonsense smashes here in Jaws, E.T., Jurassic Park, and Duel. Plus Jurassic Park 2, which gets a lot of goodwill from me because it's the closest thing to Jurassic Park in all of the other sequels. But Robin, tell me about the 3 movies I haven't seen who snuck in here. The Sugarland Express?
Oh, that's an early one. I don't know if I've seen it because I always confuse it with that one Terrence Malick movie.
So I'm not going to get a whole lot of guidance.
No, I don't think I've seen it.
It's a first official theatrical film, ex-con who kidnaps a highway patrolman in order to spend one last free moment with his children. I mean, that seems tense. Goldie Hawn. Well, ask me how that one is.
Okay.
1941.
I have almost no memory of 1941. I did see it, I think, when I was in college, and I can see why it is considered a flop or a failure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's non-remarkable.
Yeah, somebody's, I forget why, the guy I bought it from, the guy at the exchange was like, man, 1941, such a gem, and you never see it. What a value. And I was like, really? I thought this was the one that was like a wild whiff.
It has defenders. There are people who think that it gets short shrift. I don't really remember it. And I remember at the time being like, okay, I see why no one liked this.
And finally, increasing the Dreyfus count in this box set, Always.
I think I've never seen Always, and I always confuse it with Awakenings.
we might have a Spielberg double feature night of very questionable quality coming up. But yeah, Jaws, E.T., and Jurassic Park on Blu-ray. You buy them, and then whatever else is a bonus.
Right.
We might get to Jurassic Park one day, so I don't want to spoil my rating. But I watched it at the drive-in the other night thinking about, is this 100?
We'll see.
I don't know. But I will say they spend a lot of business on a thing they don't resolve. There's the business about why the Triceratops is sick that leads to the scene with Laura Dern looking through the one big pile of shit. And that I know what's going on there because I've read the book. They just drop that. That's big for me. A 100 probably can't just drop a thing. Yeah. What does this have to do with E.T.? Very little. We're talking about E.T. E.T. is so good.
I'm very excited. I haven't watched it in years, and it's an incredible movie. So
I don't want to put this out there, but I'd say Fight Club's in trouble.
It might be.
It's E.T.
We'll see.
What am I
going
to take away?
Addie's never seen it. Maybe you need to have seen it when you're a child.
Yeah, that's possible.
Yeah.
All right. That's next week. But before we get there, With Honors was released April 29th, 1994, became the number one movie in America a week later. What was the number one song in America?
Going to play by the rules and guess Mariah Carey.
Very close, but no.
Okay.
Very close.
just that she had one earlier.
Okay.
Right around this time.
Yeah. Aaliyah?
No, you're on the right radio station, but you're looking for a different voice.
It's a solo artist.
Was it I Swear? Because that you were talking about.
No, it is not I Swear. It is a solo artist.
Hmm.
Brandy.
Nope. You're finding the ladies of R&B. That is where you're going wrong.
Oh.
Were the dudes of R&B back then.
Right.
Boys like, to this Men, but they weren't solo. Seal? He wasn't Usher. Really R&B.
Neither Seal nor Usher. This is one of
John
the all-time
B?
Great...
Babyface.
This is one of the all-time great a cappella beginnings of a song. Voice comes in first with at least two full lines before the instruments.
For R&B, male singer a cappella.
We will expand the clue to say it's hard to enjoy this guy now.
R. Kelly.
R. Kelly.
Right.
What would that be, Bump and Grind?
Bump and Grind.
Okay.
It's sometimes, every now and then, you have to, like, shut off all of your morals, listen to the grind, and then turn them back on. Because, like, there is no supporting him, and the songs and the lyrics don't help.
This one in particular.
No, not at all. Yeah. It's like a confession letter.
Right. I should have played this in court. Right. It would have been great. Everyone's having a good time, and he's guilty. Number